Hi, so my name is Peter Molnar, and thank you for welcoming me here. I will be talking about Google searches and stock returns, but I will briefly mention also my other research related to Google searches. So the general motivation is that Google is the by far most used search engine in the world, and they made their data publicly available. You can essentially go to their webpage and check, for example, how much was the word Zeman search in Czech Republic or whatever you want. And generally, it's probably useful in many, many fields, but it's particularly useful in economic and finance, because in economic and finance, information plays a very important role. And Google searches are essentially search for information. So in some way, a lot of topics which couldn't be studied before or only indirectly can be now studied very easily. So at the very, very beginning, instead of some general introduction, I will give you one slide about my another topic. And actually, because it is just one example what you could study. So in this study, we studied actually whether the Google searches can explain the value of the football players. So we have the data about individual football players in the UK, very detailed data about their performance, how many points they scored and how much time they spent in the actual match, and a lot of other different data, and also estimates of their market value. And we downloaded the data for the Google searches and checked whether the value of the players is influenced by the Google searches. And we actually found that yes, the players that are searched more are more valuable, even after taking into account all those objective characteristics, like how good players they are. So this is just one example, and this example is somehow natural. You would expect that in case of the football players, if they are more popular, then they should be more valuable, because to some extent football players are entertainers. So then you could ask whether it is surprising and therefore how kind of interesting is this research. So this would be probably a little bit obvious research, that you probably know what you are going to find, but you still might be interested to check some features. For example, this way you can see whether the value of the football player is given mostly by the objective performance, or whether it is mostly how famous and popular they are, and so on. So you can still have some interesting questions. And generally, you would find a lot of kind of very, very natural applications of Google search data. For example, you could probably easily predict mortgage applications, just because before people actually apply for the mortgage, they will most likely search for the information. So similarly, you could probably predict sales of a lot of different goods. Because often if you are, let's say, going to buy a car, you will probably first search for some information. Another possible way how to use Google data would be to predict some macroeconomic variables. Because many variables are recorded only with some delay. So in some way, you can use some conveniently chosen search terms to in some way predict those macroeconomic variables, but that one wouldn't be like a real prediction. It would be just something which is correlated and available earlier than the actual macroeconomic variable. And all of these applications are maybe interesting to some extent, but you essentially know what you are going to find. Like, if you don't have good enough data, maybe you don't find anything, but if you find something, you basically know what you are going to find. So you could kind of question how interesting is would be such type of research. So I don't look into this one, because you basically know what you would learn from it. So, but when it comes to finance, it's a little bit different question. The point is that if you try to predict stock returns, they are almost impossible to predict. The reason is very obvious that a lot of people are trying to predict stock returns, and if you can do it, you could earn a lot of money. So because of this, it's far from clear whether Google searches should be able to predict stock returns, and even if yes, it's unclear whether if you see a lot of Google searches, whether it should mean that the stock returns will be high or low. So because of this, basically anything you find is new and interesting. And at the very, very beginning, I will just quickly tell you what are the main findings, and then I will explain it in more detail. So if you ask whether the Google searches can predict stock returns, then the answer is basically yes. And it's not only statistically significant, magnitude is economically meaningful, that even after taking transaction costs into account, you would still have some return. Not huge, but you could still earn money based on trading on the information from Google searches. And when it comes to time scale, because some effects are very short lasting, that maybe you need to have be trading very, very quickly or processing data very, very quickly, and maybe you need to be whatever, but it's not the case with Google searches. Those results we found are long, long lasting. So it's not that you need to have kind of the servers as close to stock exchange or as possible, nothing like this. Question?
Yes. Which way does it influence? Higher frequency of searches means what? Predicted increase or decrease?
Again?
Which way does it go?
I see. Uh-huh. I will talk about it soon because it depends on the increase on in Google searches over which period. Basically, short-term increase in Google searches predicts something else than long-term increase in Google searches. That will be my kind of main finding.
So that limits the usability because when you actually say, I did look at how much we searched yesterday, but I don't know whether that's short-term or long-term.
I think I will answer your question very, very soon. So basically, if we for a second forget about Google searches, if you would be interested what can explain stock returns, the most common explanation would be kind of a trade-off between the risk and return. So basically, in some kind of equilibrium, you would expect that investment, which is more risky, should have on average higher expected return. And this is basically what you indeed see in the stock market. And typically when you have some more formalized models like capital asset pricing model, it is essentially just formalization of this intuition. In case of capital asset pricing model, you are essentially putting into the model the risk associated with the fact that most of the stocks move together kind of with the market, and then you also have other risk factors. It could be liquidity risk, or it could be that stocks of small companies are somehow more risky than stocks of big companies, so on average stock of small companies are earning higher returns and so on. So this is important because when you are evaluating some trading strategy or whatever, you need to remember this and take into account this one. And then in addition, general literature about what can predict stock return is huge. And I just mentioned one particular theory because it's generally very intuitive and it's very much related to Google searches. So basically, Bible and Odin, they have such a theory that when some stock has a lot of media or investor attention, then that stock, during the time of attention, it pushes the price up, but later it means it underperforms. And the intuition is the following, that most small investors, if they don't have the stock, they can buy it, but if they don't have the stock, they would seldom sell the stock short. So if the stock receives a lot of attention, then there's probably somehow suddenly more buyers, but and later it should revert back. So basically, this type of attention theory should predict that during the time of attention, price of the stock goes up and then down. And this is very much related to Google searches, because Google searches are basically a very good way how to measure attention. And then the question is what to study. The first question would be whether we want to predict the stock market as a whole, or whether we want to look at individual stocks. And we choose individual stocks. And there are two reasons. One reason is that if you try to predict stock market, you have essentially very few observations. Like, even if you have daily data or high frequency data, effectively you see that stock market is kind of growing for a few years, and then there can be some crisis for another time. So even though it looks like you have a lot of data, but stock market and some kind of business cycle are quite closely associated, so in the end you don't have actually that much data really. And if you have stocks, you can take like thousands of stocks and focus mostly on cross-section, like to explain which of the stock is going to perform better and which of the stock is going to perform worse. So you have somehow more reliable data. And second is search term. It's not obvious what should be the search term. Like, for stock it's kind of simple. You just take, let's say, company name. And it's not arbitrary. You have, let's say, 1,000 stocks and you just company name. So not only that nobody would suspect that you are kind of picking up the term which just exposed seems to be the best, but it's somehow, in my opinion, better science. When it comes to stock market, you really don't know what should be the search term for the whole stock market. And this is just example from one paper. They actually argue that it's possible to predict the whole stock market because some kind of a financial words like debt predict the stock market much better than some random words. But for me, it's the case for the opposite, because they got kind of the highest return in some units, doesn't matter, when they searched for the word debt. But they got almost the same performance when they searched for the word color. And there's really no reason why it should be the color which is predicting stock market. So this is the problem, in my opinion, if you have just like one-time series, that no matter how detailed analysis you do with it, you cannot really be sure how are your results reliable. And that's probably the reason as well why those papers which look at the predicting stock market can predict really high returns. Because you essentially need to find just such a search word which would be somehow correlated with the general stock market. So if there is such type of word which was, let's say, highly searched when the stock market was going up and very little searched when it was going down, you could get even like perfect prediction. So, and when it comes to predicting individual stocks, this one paper is the most relevant one. They also study how the Google searches can predict the returns of individual stocks. And what they find is in line with that attention story, that high Google searches over last week, predict high returns over next 2 weeks, and then negative returns. And we study something very similar, but one thing is that we also use daily data, so in some way we use more detailed data, not only weekly data, but we use some script to, and it's possible to download even daily data from Google. So this is just a data issue. And second, our focus is to check Google searches over the short-term and long-term horizon. So we look what happens when you have increase in Google searches over 1 day or 1 week. Both of them can be considered like a short-term increase in Google searches. And then what happens when you have increase in Google searches over 1 quarter, like 90 days. And the data we used are companies from S&P 1500 index, but because of the data availability, mostly data from the Google searches, we end up with 519 companies, and our main focus are data from 2010 to 2014, where we have most of the data, but in order to check the consistency across the different time periods, we also check previous time periods, but there we have a little bit less data. And we have daily data. So first I will just show you an example of how the Google data look like. These are some free random companies. These are the tickers. And as you can see, I don't know, now I don't remember what is which company doing. But as you can see, those two look a little bit like noise. But this one looks very much like weekly pattern. I don't know what was that company, but it looked like over the weekend, it was always searched much less. So because... Yes, basically you just go to Google Trends and download the data. So typically it would be from 0 to 100.
So it gives it to relative to the highest for the individual search?
Yes. But given that Google Search gives it to you from 0 to 100, the actual value would depend on the time you decide to download. If you decide, let's say, from last month until this month, then this will be scaled from 0 to 100. If it would be from last year to next year, this would be scaled to 0 to 100. So one thing is that you don't want to have this pattern, because obviously you don't see this pattern in stock prices. And second, you want to have the numbers which are independent on the time scale you download. Let's say that value for the today, we want it to be independent on if you download previous months to next month or previous year to next year. So we standardize the data, and the way we standardize the data is very simple. We just always take the last 1 year of data and take away mean and divide it by standard deviation. In case of daily data, it would be taking away mean and dividing by standard deviation always only of the same day of the week because of that weekly seasonality. So as you can see afterwards, we have data which looks pretty much like...
So weekends are not excluded?
What we did with the weekends is that actually we add weekends to Friday, but then still, you know, it's still compared to those of them. So we don't really exclude weekends. Because we have the stock data only for the working days, but weekends still might contain some information, so we added weekends to Friday. But then, because of the standardization, then even though we add them, on average they have the same scaling as other days of the week.
Why Friday, why not Monday?
No, because we just wanted to make sure that when we are predicting Monday, that we use available past information. And the method we use fairly simple method, and in case you would search for something more advanced, then I would apply that. The point is that in the end, we anyways evaluate our findings by a trading strategy, which is completely independent on any kind of a statistical method, because in the end it just means we are selecting some stocks and not the other ones. So it doesn't really matter whether all the assumptions are fulfilled perfectly. So we essentially run panel data regression where we are guessing return on several explanatory variables. And the first set of the variables are essentially those risk factors which are known to explain the variation of the returns in the stock market. So these have even the same time index as the return. This way we are interested only in that unexplained part in the stock returns. And then these have the time index essentially like t minus one. So these variables are actually predicting stock returns. And what we use is obviously Google searches. And then we control for other variables which are known to have impact on the return. So for example, past return is known to have impact on the future return, even though not very strong, there's usually some kind of a mean reversion. So these are not our main interest, but we still need to control for them. So when it comes to those, we would expect that there will be some mean reversion, so high past return will predict low future return. When it comes to, for example, bid-ask spread, then you would expect that illiquid stocks should have on average higher returns, because liquidity is in some way a risk. If you have less liquid stock, you cannot sell it as easily as more liquid stock, so less liquid stocks should have higher returns, and so on. And the point is that for all these explanatory variables, we take daily, weekly, and quarterly averages to make it comparable with Google searches. This one thing. And the second thing is that when I talk about a return, I didn't mention return over which period. So we check, we have the same regression for the return over next 1 day, or return over next 2 days, return over next 3 days, until return over next 1 year, just to see whether any of those variables can predict return over short horizon or long horizon and so on. So in some way, so basically, it would be difficult to show you that many tables, so instead I will show you the pictures. So basically in this picture, on this axis, it is the time horizon of the return we are predicting. And these values are standardized coefficients from the regression. So for example, let's say if you take this dot, it would mean that for the predicting return, let's say 81 days ahead, then this variable has this coefficient. And coefficients are standardized in basis points per standard deviation of explanatory variable to make them comparable. So basically, this 1 point would mean that if weekly return is one standard deviation above average weekly return, then the return over next 80 days is going to be minus 20 basis points. So this picture basically shows you that when it comes to past returns, whether it's daily, weekly, or quarterly, there is some negative autocorrelation, because past past returns kind of predict negative future returns. This is completely consistent with the previous literature that there is some mean aversion, and it is nothing new. Then Bidas tells a very, very nice story. It seems that like the short-term value of Bidas pair doesn't matter, but this quarterly Bidas, I didn't mention that those kind of dark dots means that the coefficient is significant, and those light dots, which look just like line, means it's not significant. So again, the Bidas pair has also a very, very intuitive explanation. It means that if you take stock, which is very illiquid, it has very, very high Bidas spread, then that stock will have on average higher returns. So it is like a simple risk factor. Volatility is not really significant, and volume, one of the explanatory variables, is also seems to be significant, and particularly kind of a longer long-term increase in trading volume. And now comes the variable of other interest. So here we can see the impact of Google searches on stock returns. And daily and weekly have very similar impact as that previous paper I mentioned, or that attention story, that short-term increase in Google searches, or actually not, in our case, it predicts that it predicts a little bit negative stock returns and then some kind of reversal. But these numbers are very, very small if you look at it. And then quarterly long-term increase in Google searches predict the opposite. It predicts positive returns, and they are quite long-lasting. It means if you look at the average Google searches of the last quarter, it can tell you something about how well will the stock be doing for next like 120 days, and maybe even more. We didn't check further. So the main point is that it's important to distinguish. Yes?
From the first graph, I thought actually if I see the search terms going up yesterday, I should
move
it for 14 days.
This one is actually negative, so then you should. You mean this one? So 60 days or whatever. So, yes, so on average, over the next 60 days, it will underperform. But again,
the peak is about 2 weeks,
right? This one. Yeah. But again, this is a tiny number. This is one thing. And second is that this is already after taking into account all those other variables. So if you would be interested just on such a simple rule, then you would need to run the regression where you have only Google searches. Because this is partly for, like these pictures are mostly for academic interest, because if for academic interest you want to isolate impact of Google searches after you control for all the other variables.
So I'm deciding how long to hold it, I'm writing everything else. This tells me that if I hold it for 2 weeks, I should expect for those that went up yesterday with Google, I should expect 2 extra points.
Yes, exactly. But the interesting part is actually if you look at the scale, that this one seems to be the long term seems to be the most interesting, which is definitely not obvious, because you would expect that in financial markets that maybe the information should be absorbed very quickly. This was actually the main motivation why we bothered to download daily data, because we originally expected that it will be the daily data which will be very important because it's most recent information. But then it turned out that the most important seems to be the average of the last quarter. So it seems that stock market doesn't really incorporate that information that quickly. And then we also do some robustness checks. We divide companies into small, medium, and large. In other case, all of them are really large, but within this group. And we actually found that generally, the short-term impact is very similar. So that kind of attention story seems to be similar for small or big companies, but that long-term impact, which was the strongest, seems to be concentrated mostly in small companies. Like, you could think in such a way that for small companies it was something like this, for big companies it wasn't very strong. I didn't put a picture here. Oops. And then you could think maybe it would be better to use ticker instead of the company name, but the results are very similar, and we think that the company name works better. Then in Google search, you could choose some kind of finance filter. Again, results are similar, but we would get less data with finance filter. So we think general Google searches are enough. And we also checked different sub-periods, and the general pattern in the picture, it was very, very similar. So we like look at four different sub-periods and find the same everywhere. So the results seems to be quite strong. And to evaluate economic magnitude of this finding, we create a trading strategy. We try to do it in such a way how it would be likely used. That let's say there is a mutual fund or whatever, and they use this information to stock picking. So in one case, we simply hold all the stocks and don't trade at all. In another case, we hold all the stocks and in addition sell some of them or buy some of them according to our findings. This way we can easily compare how big is the improvement. And we use only past information, of course. And our benchmark is that passive portfolio where you just hold all the stocks, so we don't need to be worried whether our comparison is fair, that we selected only some stocks and so on. And we also check including and excluding transaction costs. So here you can see cumulative return of the period over the before transaction costs. So it's not huge. Over those 4 years, you would get additional maybe 10 or 15%, but it's still not negligible. And the most interesting part already from this graph is you are getting basically the same return whether you are trading every day or only once in a month, which is very interesting because you could possibly find a lot of strategies which could give you interesting return before transaction costs because of that high trading would kind of take away all the gains. But here it seems that you need to trade very seldom, because even frequent trading doesn't really improve it. So basically the conclusion is that before transaction costs, whether we use daily, weekly, or monthly rebalancing, all of them are profitable. And yeah, that's basically it. And then we also compare cumulative abnormal returns over the benchmark trading strategy. Benchmark trading strategy is the one which is kind of the almost identical to those Google searches, just without that Google search variable, like all the volatility, bid-ask spread, and so on. So there is still quite significant value in Google searches, because it still, as you can see, it still has positive performance. And it is Not only before, but even after transaction costs. Oh, those are somehow... Okay, those are switched. So basically, we had like three different strategies. One was completely passive. Another was based on that model I discussed before. And that benchmark strategy was based on the same model, just without Google searches. And in all cases, the one with Google searches turned out to be outperforming and even after transaction costs. And this effect is not like huge, which in my opinion makes it actually believable. It's maybe like 2% per year. You could improve the performance of your portfolio maybe by like 2% per year. But the interesting part is that it's enough if you do rebalancing very seldom. You don't need to go and trade every day. You can easily trade once a month or even less often. So that was basically the main presentation. I have actually no idea how I'm... But then I will quickly talk about my other research. Do you know what is the time? Okay. And then I will also quickly talk about...
Yes,
very, very good idea.
First of all, what kind of companies are those? Because I would assume that common sense is telling me that, for example, for technology companies, those Google searches will be fired, or for consumer companies like, I don't know, McDonald's, Starbucks, those Google searches will be again fired. Then for any other company, I don't know, like oil companies and so on.
We didn't really check in detail this. Those are basically all the companies we could download data from those S&P 1500.
It would be interesting to divide those companies in those, let's say, three groups and see if those results would be different. Because who's searching on Google, right?
I agree. I think there was no big difference, if I remember correctly, in some preliminary check. I think it didn't matter too much.
I
agree with you. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, you're
always yes, exactly.
Increases and decreases of search terms relative to the rest. So
yes.
Whatever the underlying people search for McDonald's is, it's still telling them
yes. We always normalize for each time series individually, relatively to its own past. So some part of this information is taken and out. But I agree with you that probably some company which has products which are close to customers like McDonald's might be very different than Caterpillar or somebody who's like business customers. I completely agree, but we didn't check this very carefully, but it didn't seem to matter too much, like in some preliminary checks. Like another issue is that when it comes to Apple, you know, Apple means even normal Apple and so on. So shouldn't it be removed? But we didn't want it to do too much of this. We just wanted to simply take the company names and edit, because otherwise it's a little bit subjective. What you should keep, what you should remove. And just one thing, and one general conclusion, not only from this work, it seems to be that these Google searches are always most relevant when you take some kind of a very general search with like a huge search volume. That if you try to specify it more, you would think that you are getting more precise searches, but it's somehow on the smaller sample, and it actually works worse. That, for example, that finance filter, or if you would think like, let's say, you would say company name and the word financials or whatever, that maybe it should be more relevant for the stock price, but just by getting kind of a averaging of a much lower search volume, you are getting actually less relevant data.
And the other thing is that, for example, we are taking Google searches as kind of a behavioral factor.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the increase of Google searches could affect those returns.
Yes.
When we have the same level of information, it should not affect it at all, right? I would assume this.
Again?
For example, if the level of Google searches is basically the same mm-hmm. during the time, so it couldn't affect returns at all.
Yes.
So if you try to, for example, take a look at the abnormal returns and how the changes in Google searches...
No, these are basically abnormal returns. This is what I was trying to do, because...
You have abnormal returns.
Because essentially, one of the guesses are those like market return and those factors. So effectively, it means you are taking abnormal returns.
And one more question. I'm
wrong here. No. Kind of I'm very happy. I'm very happy.
But the basic standard methodology for those kind of searches is basically to use Fama McGregor regression. Instead of panel regression, so why do you use...
This comment is very good, because actually that was the main comment from the where I got rejection. Just because my main point was it just, in some way, it's very simple. One command is that where is far back, but it's still...
Just basically, then you're using panel regression on any of those asset pricing models, you wouldn't get any results. And then you're using...
I know. So for me, I just my main point was that I'm going to take strategy anyways. So for me, this was kind of the main evaluation. So I was thinking it doesn't really matter, but it's AI that researchers are used to what is standard. But the effect is basically the same. Like whether you have some panel data aggregation or Fama Macbeth, I think it's started a similar thing, just as you said. Fama Macbeth will often give you more significant results. So from the perspective of publication, I should have done it that way. But from just kind of having insights into what's happening, I think this way is equally good. Any questions? Then I will go to the next one. But the rest will be very, very short. It's mostly to show you that Google searches are really useful, that even in other topics you will be getting as well relevant results. So next, this will be just few slides, so don't worry. I also looked with other quarters on different topic, and it is IPOs, initial public offering. It means like when you have a company which was not traded on some stock exchange, and then the company is going to sell some stocks on the stock exchange. And in this case, what happens, first the company will somewhere file that they are going to do this IPO, and then under 10, 15, 20 weeks, the IPO will happen. So maybe it's already known before that filing date, but doesn't really matter because you cannot really earn any money at all before that or anything. So, but at least you know that at filing date, this is known, that company is going to do IPO, and then there is the IPO. And we study whether the Google searches during this period can predict first-day return and long-term returns. And in the case of IPO, the distinction between first-day returns and all the next returns is very important, because they are somehow different. And the reason is that you as a private person can seldom buy stocks in IPO. So first day returns are actually returns to institutional investors, whereas the subsequent returns are essentially standard stock returns. The stock is already traded at stock exchange and you can buy or sell it. And again, what is typically found in case of IPO, you have on average large first day returns, those which go mostly to the institutional investors which bought the shares directly in the IPO, but subsequent long term returns are not so good. So this would be also in accordance with attention story. And in the literature, that's what the paper found before. Where, interestingly, we found a little bit the opposite. For the first day returns, we found the same, that high Google searches predict high first day return, But again, even high long-term returns. And one thing is that the data are not completely comparable. We use completely different data set. They use something like 2004 to 2008. We use 2011 to 2014. But I think the main reason is the same as I mentioned before, that they used Google searches from just last 1 week. We used Google searches over the whole period between filing period and IPO, so it was like 15 weeks. So in some way, we looked at the impact of long-term increase in Google searches, and again find results which are actually quite consistent with what we found in that completely different study. So this was very quick about IPOs, and then even quicker about predicting volatility. So in another study, I also looked on predicting volatility of different currencies. And Google searches would be naturally useful if you have just daily data, because if you have some volatility model, let's say GAETCH, what GAETCH do is actually some kind of essentially some kind of moving average of a longer period, because if you have only data, only daily data, then you have kind of very little information. So to get rid of the noise, GAETCH effectively take moving average over last, I don't know, several weeks, basically. That's what the GAETCH will do. So if you have like Google data, which might be somehow measured more precisely, it's probably very likely it will improve the volatility model. But then the question is, could it improve the volatility forecasting even if you have very good data? And in case of currencies, you can very easily have very good high frequency data for every 1 minute or even more often. So if you take this high frequency data, you can calculate what is called realized volatility, which is like very precise volatility estimate, and use that one in volatility modeling. And then we compared this in some way very good volatility model with the volatility model when we also add Google searches. And the one with Google searches worked significantly better. So you can basically, this is just another application when the Google searches worked. And then in another paper I did with another co-authors, essentially the same for individual stocks. And again, you can use Google searches to predict volatility of individual stocks also. And then in another paper, we studied when company announces earnings, like what is happening afterwards. It's called post-earning announcement drift. It is generally documented in literature that when company announces earnings, then this information is still somehow incorporated in the stock prices gradually, and so on. And even in this case also, Google searches can predict essentially what's happening to the company afterwards. So these additional few slides, it was just to show you that even in finance, where it's very, very difficult to predict stock returns or volatility because you are essentially able to make money if you are able to do so, in 5 applications I tried with my co-authors, of course it would be too difficult to do it all by myself, but in all 5 applications we found significant results. So this might motivate you. I really don't know what exactly you are doing, but I think that just Google searches are such a general data source that whatever you are doing, it might be actually useful for you. And yes, and then the most general conclusion would be what I mentioned before, that from our result, it seems to be important to distinguish between short-term and long-term increase in Google searches, because those might have different impact. In case of stocks, you can think in such a way that the short-term increase is maybe that attention story, but long-term increase is maybe more related to whether some company is generally good, or they have maybe good products, customers are searching for it or whatever. This seems to be, for me, possible explanation. And this another one is that the just example from those currency volatility we also studied, that my first idea was that we should study this search term because it's very natural. And then we tried also this one without any sign before, just like a code for those currencies. But actually what worked even better was to take separately this one, and either put them, both of them, or just average. So this as well seems to be consistent with other things we tried in those other papers, that in some way, even this is a little bit too specific search term, and if you search just for euro or just for US dollar, you are probably getting some kind of statistics of a larger population. So it seems to be very important to use search words which are probably very, very frequent. That I'm not sure how well would Google searches work for some very, very specific search words. So probably just keep in mind, if you want to use it, to keep the search term very general.
Might want to just try Google search for the stock market code, right?
You mean tickers?
Sorry, yeah, not the ticker, the code. Wouldn't that be a way? Because I understand that you might get into the small numbers problem, which you just explained.
Actually, when it comes to tickers, we tried. Results are very similar, just a little bit worse. So, because actually when it comes to individual companies, people are doing both. Sometimes people do company names, sometimes people do tickers. For me, intuitively, I think that if you are an investor, remember the ticker, that when you are going to search for Apple, you need to search for AAPL, then you are probably not going to just search for this ticker on Google, but you probably go directly to some web where you are getting information from. So my intuition is that for this reason, general search for the company name might be more useful. Like, I cannot imagine any professional going and searching for some ticker on a Google. So in some way, because of this, Google searches are, I think, capturing the attention of those less informed and smaller investors. And that's, I think, why tickers are probably a little bit less relevant.
And one more, just basic. Do you need to make special adjustments for when people Google Google?
Do
you need to make special adjustments? We didn't.
We didn't, but you know, it's just one of many, many stocks, so it definitely doesn't have really any impact on the result. But you are right. Probably Google should be taken out, because Google is obviously searched way too much, mostly for searching purposes.
It's just that in general, you can explain asset prices with consumption. If the consumption is growing, the asset market is going to grow as well, the market itself. So with those searches, you are basically showing the consumer confidence in those particular companies. So you should not exclude it. It's also relevant information for investors. People basically buying those goods
of those
companies.
No, I think both would be possible. My attitude was simply, we are taking all the stocks and that's it. Because then when I kind of have least optionality, then I think it's most easier to defend that it's not just by my subjective way of removing some stocks which are in some way in purple names. I don't know if there's any other question. Then thank you for your attention.